Welcome into Late Night Baseball. It's another week of baseball talk here with the boys, Anthony and Parker. We're here every week talking baseball, and we're trying something new this week, folks. We are going live. If you are on YouTube, go ahead and find Late Night Baseball on YouTube. Check us out live. We're going to try to do these each and every week for you as we talk baseball. Parker, we have a lot to talk about today. We're continuing our weekly division previews as we get closer to spring training games. How are you feeling?
I just want to be very clear. You are live. I am not live. I am pre-recorded. But I'm really excited, man. I'm really excited. One day until spring training games. As of right now, check your Baseball Savant page if you want that countdown at your fingertips. By the time you watch this, it's time for spring training games. Cubs and Dodgers are kicking it off. Basically right after you listen to this episode, because we all know you listen as soon as it comes out. But yeah, guys,
what's going on?
We're here, Parker. And here's the thing. So folks, let's level set here. Since we're live, you're seeing us in this format on YouTube. As a reminder, really, YouTube's where you want to be coming to catch Late Night Baseball. I mean, we post the audios on wherever you get your podcast, because hey, some people like to listen while they're mowing the lawn, walking their dog, in church, not listening, whatever you do, don't judge. But if you want to listen to us, you can do it. But going forward, the best place to catch us is going to be here on YouTube, where we continue to post really awesome content. So let's just dive into it today, Parker. There is a lot to talk about before we even get to the previews. We are going to do the AL Central preview today, folks. We are also going to do something new this week. We are going to do AL Central superlatives. Yes, quite. We are doing AL Central superlatives after we do the bold prediction and our standing predictions for the AL Central. But Parker, we've got to start with the big news out of Boston and kind of the lingering conversations around the Alex Bregman pickup. Why don't you kind of just get it off your chest and tell me what you're feeling?
Man, we hit the leave lobby button after recording our last episode, and 3 minutes later my phone went off saying Alex Bregman is the newest member of the Boston Red Sox. I could not have been happier. This is literally what I've been asking for all offseason. This is a dream scenario as a Red Sox fan. It has completely changed the way that a lot of people are looking at the division. It has completely changed the way that people are looking at the Red Sox. And then we didn't even get to make it to our next recording, our next show, before the entire baseball media world blew up with what is apparently the biggest controversy to happen in baseball since Barry Bonds and Balco.
Jesus.
And what ended up happening is that Rafael Devers is the starting third baseman for the Boston Red Sox. And in case you didn't know, Alex Bregman is the Gold Glove winner at third base. And he played his last few seasons with his entire career with the Astros. And everybody kind of assumed that Bregman, over the course of this free agency, he was very vocal about how he would play second base. He'd be willing to move positions for the right team. Apparently, Boston was the right team because Bregman's saying all the right things. Bregman's saying, I'll play wherever. I'll do whatever AC tells me to do. Alex Cora is the boss. I'm here to do whatever he tells me to do. Rafael Devers, on the other hand, feels very differently about this whole situation. And he was sitting down with the media and they asked him, you know, are you going to be willing to move off of third base? And he flat out said, no. No, I'm not willing to move off third base. And they asked him, would you DH? He goes, no. Would you play first base? No. He said, I play third. And it's like, I have so many thoughts. I could talk about this for the next hour just by itself. So I'll go ahead and let you say your piece on it. And then I got a couple things that I want to add on top of this whole pile.
You know, I think our reactions were the same when we heard this, and my immediate reaction was like, dude, you're the franchise player, step up, be the leader. You should be in it for the team. Like, it should be, yeah, Alex Cora, I'm going to do whatever I can to help this team win. If it means me going to DH, so be it. That's how you want a player of his magnitude representing this team as their franchise player. That's how you want him to act. Now, that was my baseball emotional reaction. And then my kind of mature reaction was, well, hold on. Think about what Devers has gone through with this team, right? He was the one guy that was allowed to stay because Mookie Betts sure as hell wasn't. Xander Bogaerts wasn't. Devers went through all the bullshit with this team. Now put yourself in his shoes and think about, I went through the bullshit. I was here with this team. And all of a sudden now they bring in this guy that's older than me and he could play third base. Good for him. I've been here, buddy. And there's a pride thing there. Not to say that's right, not to excuse the comment, but I understand where he's coming from. Having said that, there's so many examples of guys that in this sport who've acted that way and have not been team first. The biggest example, I think of Derek Jeter when the Yankees signed A-Rod and he was like, I'm not getting off shortstop, and A-Rod went to third. Like, that's not a, like, you think of Derek Jeter now and we all forget, like, he was a stubborn a-hole in that moment, and maybe Devers is being that way now, but I don't know. Like, is that more like a, is it on Devers, Parker, or is it on like the Red Sox who didn't, did they not communicate to Devers early on? Like, oh, by the way, we may sign Alex Bregman, prepare for this. Like, I wonder how much of it was like a people management issue. You know what I mean? Like,
as an HR professional, I'm sure that's exactly what you were thinking of, right?
Of course. Of course. HR pro by day. I think about it that way. But like, can you have done better there to make him feel better about the situation? Could you have like stroked his ego a little bit to like get him on board with this, you know?
So I completely understand where you're coming from. I couldn't agree more to a certain point. You know, Rafael Devers has been a part of this organization since he was 16 years old. He came up through it. He won a World Series in his rookie season. Was it even his rookie season? I want to say it was his pre-rookie season. He won a World Series. He has played day in and day out for this team. He has played hurt. He has given his heart and soul to the Red Sox. And I completely agree. I was one of the people screaming about extend this guy because I want his bat in the lineup and I want this guy around the club for the rest of his entire career. Now, the Red Sox fan in me says, Rafi, let's talk about what you were asked to do over the last 7 years. Over the last 7 years, consecutively 7 years, Rafael Devers has been the MLB leader in errors at the third base position. And every single fucking spring training, man, I have to hear the same rhetoric about how Rafael Devers spent the entire offseason working on his defense and how this is going to be the year where everything suddenly changes and he's a gold glove caliber third baseman. And as somebody that watches probably, I would say conservatively, 140 out of the 162 Red Sox games every single year.
Conservatively.
The guy can make the big play. He can certainly make the big play. But it's the throwing errors on the routine plays and stuff like that that really like create catastrophic innings, put us in a bad position, and make the team lose games down the stretch. So let's talk about the alternative.
Sure.
He's being asked to fill the most, potentially the most prestigious DH role in all of Major League Baseball. Let's talk about the lineage in that DH position. David Ortiz and JD Martinez were absolute dogs in that DH role, and they did it for a long time, and they were very good. And then if you move out of the out of third base and into DH, you talk about being able to put a gold glover there to improve the defense. You talk about being able to bring up the number 3, 4, 5, whatever prospect in baseball and Christian Campbell to play second base. For me, the alignment ends up being better with you at DH. You stay healthier at DH. You're able to focus on your strongest tools if you're DHing. To me, it feels like, man, if only this guy was willing to give up his defensive position to the superior defender in this instance. And there's more to this. I do want to talk about the Tristan Casas comments here towards the end, because that's really where my major point comes in. But yeah, that's where I'm at with the Rafi side of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really appreciate the lack of self-awareness, right? Like, I expected when he had that spring training press conference and he's made those no comments, I'm a third baseman. Like, I would love to have heard, hey, you know, I feel like I'm going to have a better defensive season. This is what I'm doing. I'm committed to getting better on defense, not just flat. No, like, come on, buddy. Have some self-awareness. to know that you're just a kind of a liability there. Like, own that, and that's okay. And it would be better for him, like you said, to just go to the DH spot. Everyone wins, yeah, I think, other than his ego.
To me, the ego is a big thing for me, because when you watch back the interview, if you paid more close attention to what he says in Spanish to his translator, the translator was taking a little bit of the edge off of some of his comments.
Interesting.
If you know a little bit of Spanish, you can hear. There's a couple times where the translator was like, I believe the third base is my position. But when in reality, Devers was like, there was no subtlety in what he was saying. He was very, like, abrupt in his answers in his native language. And, you know, it, like you said, it's the ego. It is what it is. I honestly, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, you know what? Right now, it's a position battle. And right now, he should be as dedicated to that position battle as he could possibly be so that he can earn his spot. And then maybe when the decision comes to move him off of his position, then sure.
Yeah.
Then he moves into that position willingly and he fulfills his role for the team. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that. The person I'm not willing to give the benefit of the doubt is Tristan Casas. And look, I'm a Tristan Casas guy. I'm almost a Tristan Casas apologist. I'm one of the people that's going to tell you, I don't care about the yoga. I don't care about what all the antics and stuff like that that people talk. I genuinely think that's part of his character. I don't think he's doing an act. I don't think he's trying to seem bigger than he is. I don't think he's putting himself in front of the team. Until he made the comments he made the following day where he said, I think Rafael Devers is a third baseman. I think he's my third baseman. I think he's been there forever. I think that it keeps him athletic. And I think that Bregman should play second. And then he went on to say later on, in not so many words, that he doesn't think that Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, or Christian Campbell, any of those three should break camp with the Red Sox on the 40-man roster or on the 25-man roster, on the active roster, which, say what you want about the infield alignment, because I can chalk that part up as like, okay, if Rafael Devers moves off third base, then there's going to be people who want him to move to first. Casas might feel a little threatened by that. Okay, I can sort of understand that. And I am absolutely positive that Alex Cora is going to handle that situation with his very young, unproven, can't stay healthy first baseman at the earliest possible time. I'm sure it's already been handled from Alex Cora's perspective. But here's the thing. You are not a part of the front office of this organization. You have not been a part of developing these players. There is a lot more people than he even sees on a daily basis that are part of the development and the hard work that these three, particularly these three big three prospects that the Red Sox have. It is not a fucking close call to determine whether it is his place to say who deserves to be on that 26-man active roster. I find it ridiculous and I find it unprofessional as shit to say things like that, especially as somebody who's, let's be honest, done nothing to, like, if Derek Jeter in the 16th year of his career said something like that, we'd all be like, okay, Derek Jeter's the captain. Tristan Casas isn't the captain of the fucking Red Sox. Tristan Casas is just the guy that they put him in a Netflix documentary because he was hurt all year last year and talking about taking mental swings and how it was helping his real life swing and talking about how he felt like he was getting stabbed and shot even though the medical staff had already cleared it to play. This guy's put his foot in his mouth too many times at this point, and I just think that it's not fair for him to be doing that, especially because this is a team that Red Sox fans have been talking about for years, had needed veteran leadership. And the second veteran leadership walks through the door, unfortunately for Bregman, he's the subject of the controversy. So how do you lead your array through that controversy? It puts him in a terrible position to help this clubhouse. It puts the whole team in a terrible position. It really got me riled up this week, and that's why I really wanted to talk about it.
Well, the last thing I'll say on the matter is I really hope this year isn't one of those, like, random Red Sox years where, like, it's just a year of a bunch of, like, BS drama. Because those happen in Red Sox Nation, like, randomly every couple years.
Right, in, like, 2012 and Bobby Valentine and stuff. Like, yeah, it's so annoying.
What's in the water out there? But I hope that doesn't happen this year. And I just, it would be such a Red Sox thing to happen.
We talk about... you know what? Now that you bring that up, there are so many seasons like that. There's like the chicken and beer season that got John Farrell fired. There's the didn't get John Farrell fired. That got Terry Francona fired. There's the like I just said, Bobby Valentine season. There's the firing of Alex Cora and Ron Renicki, literally like everybody knew he was a placeholder and so had no pull in that clubhouse and no pull in the media, and everybody just wrote him off for a year. And it's like, I'm so sick of this franchise embarrassing itself on a national stage, because everything that you do is on national news because you are the Boston Red Sox. You're one of the three most successful and prominent franchises in this entire sport. And it just, come on, guys, start acting like it.
Totally, totally. Let's go ahead so we can get to our AL Central division preview here. It's extension season, Parker. As we get to spring training, a lot of people are drawing lines in the sand, wanting to get extensions done before these games begin there in Arizona and Florida. A couple right off the bat that I just wanted to talk about. I want to kind of run through these, and then let's talk about ones that kind of really stand out to you. So Cole Reagans went ahead and signed a three-year $12.25 million deal with the Royals. What's interesting about that is that really only takes him through the first 2 years of his arbitration, so not even to his free agent years, which is pretty interesting. Pretty the Diamondbacks went ahead and extended Geraldo Perdomo to a four-year extension. That one's also interesting because Perdomo is not an all-star, not a guy that will kind of blow you away, but he is a very average mid player, and they paid for him. We'll talk about that in a second. The A's Mark Kotze manager was extended through 2028 with a team option for 2029, so he'll have a chance potentially to manage the A's in Vegas in 29. And then the big one, Parker, is the one who didn't get an extension. Of course, that's a Vladdy Guerrero Jr., the Blue Jays, and him not agreeing to a deal. What stands out to you here, Parker?
One thing I do want to point out real quick, that with the absence of last year, Geraldo Perdomo has three full seasons of big league experience. And like I said, outside of last year where he played only 98 games, he posted 148 and 145 games played for the Diamondbacks. And I think that the most important ability is availability. I think that finding a guy that can go out there and give you, you know, league average, if not a little better defense at his position, to the tune of basically league average offensive production, lock him up, take him off the market. And, you know, there's not very many of those guys. It's a pretty shallow pool for talent since the Padres signed every shortstop in existence. So yeah, go ahead and keep him around. I think that this is also, it screams like clubhouse deal. Like this is probably a guy who's very well liked in that clubhouse. And, and they want to keep him around for a while for sure.
Yeah, he's one of those guys too. That's I think such an underrated thing that I think we fans all forget about. He does not swing at bad pitches. His plate discipline is great. He's going to draw you some walks. He's going to be selective. He's a bunt extraordinaire, bunting extraordinaire. I think he's one of those guys, when we always talk about like building a team from the ground up, you're going to have your two, three, four guys who are your way above average all-star players. But if you don't have really solid average guys up and down that lineup, filling out those
average guys,
you're not doing anywhere. You're not going anywhere. And Perdomo's the great cost-effective average guy to have, which I think is the play for the Diamondbacks. So I love it. I love it.
I love the move. I love the move, because think about what it's going to cost to bring him, what it would be to sign him when he does hit free agency. Let's say he plays an average of 145 games a year and has league average production in both defensive and offensive sides of the ball. You're going to cost $15 million a year. So, I mean,
he's
lock him up for cheaper than that.
Perdomo, the best way to describe him in my mind is he's really good at a few certain things, but altogether not great. But some of his tangible skills are really good. He's one of those guys.
For sure. For sure. I couldn't agree more.
I want to go to, because we're already, I don't want to take too much time from our AL Central Division preview since you waxed poetic about the Red Sox Nation. so let's go to Vlad Jr., Parker, because I have strong feelings about this on my end. They didn't come to an extension with Vlad Jr. We've talked many times on this show together about how the Blue Jays are just screwing the pooch here. And yet again, they're not getting it done. And this is the best way I can explain it to people. If you go back to 2019, 2022, when they could have had opportunities to extend Vlad, I mean, how would you feel? How do you think they feel now, knowing they probably could have extended him to the same deal Fernando Tatis Jr. got? They could have extended him 3 years ago and not been, you know, complaining about all the money they have to pay him now. Like, they are terrible at timing these deals and getting ahead of the market, and now it's biting them in the ass.
Absolutely, and it's been a problem in the past. It's continuing to be a problem now, and I think, to your question, I think that they feel similarly to like how Boston felt when they let Xander Bogaerts walk, because everybody kind of was screaming at them for years to extend Bogaerts before he hit the market, and then the Red Sox mm-hmm. seemed like they were okay with him hitting the market. It was a very similar situation where it was like, all right, you don't get it done by this day of spring training. By the time I report, it's not happening. And here we are. Vladdy's going to hit the market. He's going to make over $400 million. I'm completely convinced of it. And to be honest, I'm very happy that the Blue Jays didn't extend him because, number one, I either want him out of the division or I want him on the Red Sox. And right now, it really looks like he would love to play for the Red Sox if you start reading between the lines a little too much, like us Red Sox fans like to do. But you're absolutely right. The Blue Jays definitely punted this into the stands. They've continuously done so. And think about how different this is if they sign Shohei Ohtani last year, if they sign Juan Soto this year. Think about what this looks like if they get two out of those, I don't know, 10 of the last big free agents that have been on the market, and now the lineup looks drastically different. I think they extended Vladdy last year if they get some of those deals done. But unfortunately, I don't think that the Blue Jays could sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr. They could have said $500 million right now, cut and dry. And I think he would say, you missed my mark and I'm not signing this extension. Because I just genuinely think he was giving them an opportunity to build a lineup, not build a proposal package. And I think that they spent time building the proposal package rather than the lineup.
That's a really good point. One thing I will say about Vlad Guerrero Jr. is I don't want it to get lost how truly good he is and productive. And I think he's one of those people that it's easy for us to forget about him and he falls through the cracks, whether it's because he plays in Toronto or, hey, he's a bigger dude, 225, right? Like first baseman, not a premier position. But Parker, let me ask you this. I think this you'll find this fascinating. I have a ranking of 2021 through 2024. Plate appearances in Major League Baseball. Where do you think Vlad Jr. ranks in plate appearances in Major League Baseball?
Only because you and I are the same person. We both pulled up his Baseball Reference or Fangraphs pages when we started talking about him. So I'm looking at his plate appearance numbers, and they are astronomical. The guy averages close to 700 plate appearances. Actually, 162 averages 700 plate appearances. So I'm going to say top three.
Absolutely, dude. He's at number two behind only Marcus Semien in plate appearances. He's number three in games played behind Semien and Matt Olson. And let's put him at seventh in home runs since 2021. This guy posts. He's never been on the injured list. He shows up every damn day. I mean, this is as sure of a bet in a lineup as you can get. And I think people forget that.
I think people also, for some reason, are down on his production lately, and I think it's because the home run numbers have dipped, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr. reminds me so much of a right-handed David Ortiz in that David Ortiz, like, he never had a 26 home run season like Vladdy had in 2023. Like, maybe he did, but I don't remember him off the top of my head. Everybody remembers David Ortiz for putting up 35-plus every year, right? Well, Vladdy's going to go at an average 32 home runs over a 162-game stretch, and then he's also going to hit for average, man. Last year, you're probably looking at it right now, but what do you think his average was last year in his almost 700 plate appearances?
Over 300, the 320s.
323 last year. Do you think of Vladdy Jr. as a 323 hitter? I don't.
Not a chance. That's some Luis Arias shit right there.
Absolutely. 323 is insane. And when you have a career OPS of 863, there's nothing to talk about here. You should have signed him. Toronto punted it into the stands, and they definitely should have signed him.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. No doubt he's going to the market. My blessings to you that he goes to Boston. We'll see. I don't have a chance in the world on here on the South side. So Godspeed. What I will say is, speaking of Southside, we gotta go and talk about the AL Central and go into these teams. This is the second to last one we've done. We're almost through all these divisions, which is crazy, which means we're getting close to spring training games here. Parker, let's start this way with the AL Central. Obviously, this is near and dear to my heart, being a Sox guy, White Sox guy. I kind of compare the AL Central to the AL West we talked about last week.
Okay.
Because the way I view it is the AL West is one of those divisions where anyone can just pop off and take that division. Yeah. In the AL Central, it's a matter of who's going to be slightly worse than the rest and not be the last team standing. And people are going to shit on me saying, oh, that's not true. You know, these teams have taken a step forward. But let's not forget, this is still one of, if not the weakest division in baseball. So what I want to do, Parker, is let's go through team by team and let's kind of briefly talk about each and where they kind of stand right now. Let's start with the Guardians. When you look at the Guardians, what are you expecting out of them this year?
I'm expecting Big Christmas to have a great year. I think, okay, so the Cleveland Guardians, it's so weird because I'm looking at the projected standings right now on Fangraphs, the Zips projected standings, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't, no.
Nobody in this division is projected to finish more than two games above 500. However, if any of the top four teams in this division were to play in the ALCS next season, we'd be like, okay, yeah, I mean, I could see them happen. I could see it happening.
Sure.
So it's almost like this situation where, especially with Cleveland, you're really wondering if they're going to get hot at the right time, make a run, make a wild card berth, maybe even win the division. And I could genuinely see it, everything clicking all at the same time and seeing the Guardians make a run at the ALCS, or even if they get extremely hot in the playoffs, a World Series.
Stop. Look at what happened last season.
I know they're out on, they don't have Naylor anymore, but I don't know, man. Something about this team, Stephen Vogt.
Okay, can I say something here that's really important? The people need to know. We've matched our standing predictions for every one of these divisions. I am confident in saying we finally are not going to do that here tonight.
I think so too.
And part of this is because I just am the other side of the Guardians here. And here's where I agree with you. The Guardians have that super special magic sauce. I don't know what it is, but every year, especially with their pitching, they just seem to put it together. I'm a big Stephen Vogt guy. I think he's an awesome manager. I think he's done a lot for that team after Terry left. But there is some serious questions to me when you do lose kind of a spark plug like Josh Naylor. I think they're going to regret that, if I'm being honest. Their rotation, I don't see anyone there that I'm 100%, you know, like, ooh, I can really count on that guy, you know. It's right, and that's really it after that. Even Tristan McKenzie's fallen off in the last couple of years. Gavin Williams looks promising. I think he's someone that, is as long as he's consistent and he can shove, great, whatever. But that's a problem with this division. I look at the Guardians, and I'm not seeing the Guardians like I see, you know, the Rangers or the Red Sox or the Yankees, and go, yeah, they're just all around a really solid team. Like, there's just still a lot of question marks, and they haven't really filled those gaps.
For sure. So my thing with the Guardians is that it's only this division that makes me so much confidence in them. If they were praying in the AL East, I'm putting them in last, weirdly enough. But I just think that this is the kind of team that, especially when you have veteran leadership like a J-Ram and Stephen Vogt, I genuinely think Stephen Vogt is up there with one of the managers that has the most effect on a game on any given day. Mm-hmm. And like, if they got hot and they ended up, let's just say, taking the ALDS to five games, would you genuinely be that surprised?
Yes.
Really? All right. Well, we're definitely working on it.
All right. I would. And I'm going to explain why here in a second. We're going to get through it all. Okay. So we were torn on the Guardians, which is perfectly fine. I think This is a prime example of what we're talking about. The Guardians could be a team that hits the Fangraphs projection, albeit I think their projection's a little low, 77 wins for the Guardians, which is crazy to think about. That would require them going from 92 wins in 24 to 77, which would be crazy. We'll be talking about that if that happens. But I don't necessarily know that they are going to get to 92 wins. But before we recap all of that, let's move over to the Royals. And Parker, to me, the Royals are one of the more interesting teams in baseball right now. And I'm really hoping this could go one or two ways for the Royals. This could be a continuation of a kind of trajectory of really solid baseball that they're putting together, or it could prove that 2024 was a lightning in a bottle situation for them. I really hope it's not the latter.
I am big time on the Royals. I am so in on the Royals this upcoming season. I am the number one fan of any team in this, of any person talking about this division. I'm the number one fan of the Royals. I'm so high on Bobby Witt. I am so high on Cole Reagans. I still think Seth Lugo can do it. Go ahead and do it. I believe Michael Wacha is there for another year. I genuinely think that the Royals have to do it this season. And I think Bobby Witt is going to be a Super Saiyan version of himself in this upcoming season. I'm so high on what the Royals are putting together. The veteran leadership from Salvi Perez. I'm very high on a team that has three serviceable starters that continuously go out there and put the ball over the plate, and a lineup that has been hot and cold at times, but definitely an electric factory when it's running. And when you have a guy at the top of that lineup like Bobby Witt, I'm so bought in. I'm so on the Royals this year.
I think there's going to be an opportunity for some of their players to take a step forward. And that's why I kind of like where they're at for 25. I think last season things really clicked for them. Bobby Witt Jr. had an MVP season. There's a couple kind of differentiators here that I really like for 25. Number one, I do like the move for Jonathan India to lead off for them this coming season. Mm-hmm. I think Jonathan India was a natural change of scenery guy. I think he needed to get out of Cincinnati. Yeah. I think this move is going to be great for him. And he's one of those, he's a great on base guy. We all love guys that get on base, and they needed that at the top of the lineup. Bobby Witt needs to be somewhere two or three, and that's going to be huge for them. So that's number one. Number two, you look at guys like a Vinny Pasquantino, a Michael Massey. These are still younger dudes that could take a leap forward in 2025 in their sophomore and junior season. So, I mean, we could have seen the floor last year, which is kind of crazy to think about.
I genuinely think we did see the floor. I mean, look at this lineup. Top to bottom, we got Jonathan India, Bobby Witt, Vinny Pasquantino, Salvi Perez, Michael Massey, guys we've all mentioned. But now let's talk about the guys that we haven't mentioned. Hunter Renfro, solid offensive player, plays decent defense. NJ Melendez, this is another guy I'm high on personally. Maybe it's because every time he comes to Boston, he absolutely rakes and completely destroys the Red Sox single-handedly. But I think MJ Melendez, if he can just do that on a slightly more consistent basis, I think we're looking at an all-star. And then Michael Garcia and Kyle Isbell, let's see what we get out of those guys for sure. But I think there's a lot of growth that is going to happen this year from this Royals team. And I would bet they had some stellar offseason get-togethers where they all just got together, talked ball, played ball, worked on each other, worked on their mechanics, and are going to come out and genuinely be able to put together a really solid season. I think this might be one of the better clubhouses in Major League Baseball. I think this is going to be a super fun clubhouse to be a part of. It's like the Orioles and these guys.
For sure, for sure. We're a vibes show. We love the vibes. We're here for immaculate vibes. And this is one of those teams that when we're talking about some of the fun teams in the heart of the summer and the dog days of summer, it's going to be this team.
For sure. Especially in those super, super hot Kansas City summer games. It's going to be super fun to see what a young team can do when the weather's beaten down on maybe lineups that are a little older than them.
Let's go over to the other young, exciting, up-and-coming team upstart in this division. Upstart team, the Tigers. And I'll tell you what, Parker, how you feel about the Royals, I feel about the Tigers. Okay. I am so excited about the Tigers. I think they have the opportunity to really piece it together here. And when we, I think when we look back on 2025, it's going to be like the 2023 Diamondbacks, where we're like, holy shit, look at this Diamondbacks team in 2023 that came out of nowhere, represented the NL in the World Series. After what the Tigers did last year with not that many tools at the end of a long season, could they be the Diamondbacks of 2025? Maybe.
Could be. I mean, not a single person in the projected starting lineup's age starts with a 3. Jake Rodgers, you're squeaking it at 29.8 years of age right now.
Well, now that Javi Baez is on the bench, yeah.
Yeah, well, again, Javi Baez, I still just think that there's going to be – he's going to get some playing time, man. He's going to get a good amount of playing time for as much money. You never know. I mean, he does play good defense, and I don't know. But do you want Trey Sweeney on the field, though? You really want Trey Sweeney yeah. on the field? But the thing is, Trey Sweeney makes their lineup very left-hand heavy. So I think right, you see it right. with Javi Baez, especially against left-handed pitching.
Yeah, I think that's the only time you really play Baez. They're really in a sticky situation with him. They're still 70-something million locked up in Baez for the next 3 years. And that's just, I can't even fathom that. I mean, that's a fall from grace right there. I could talk about that for another 30 minutes. It's insane.
Yeah, but when you look at this lineup top to bottom, there is so much to be excited about. Parker, Meadows, Gleyber Torres, Riley Green, Carey Carpenter, Matt Veerling, Colt Keith, Jace Young, Jake Rodgers, and Trey Sweeney. Genuinely a good lineup. Gleyber Torres has a bunch of postseason history. I think he's going to be able to talk these young guys down when it comes to, you know, producing in the postseason, whether or not he does so himself. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be excited about in Detroit for sure. And then we can't forget about the pitching rotation. Side of things.
Yeah, oh,
yeah. Because the best pitcher on planet Earth is the number one on this team, and he's slinging from the left side, and he's just absolutely, he is a dog in every sense of the word. And then after him, it's not that bad either. We got Jack Flaherty, Reese Olson, Casey Mize, and Jackson Jobe. And Jackson's 22 years old. It's going to be a bumpy season, most likely, if we go off of what, you know, we can expect from them. But when you talk about bringing a guy back like Jack Flaherty, now we've got a little bit of continuity in this rotation. And I mean, I think that the Tigers genuinely, they're one of those few teams that have somebody with, that you can put out in the bump every 5 days where Tarik Skubal's going to give you a chance to be the better team that day. He's probably not going to give up more than 2 runs. You just got to slap a couple runs across the plate, play some defense, and you guys are home free. So when you talk any rotation that has a guy like Tarik Skubal in it, I'm going to be high on. And then I think Jack Flaherty's due for a nice little bounce back season, especially considering he plans on hitting free agency again next year.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I really like the pitching. I do think, I mean, when you look at the Fangraphs projection, those first 3 guys all projected to be an under 4 ERA. If they can pull that off, that would be sub 4 would be absolutely fantastic. And that bullpen carried that team in August and September and into the postseason. So they're going to be there. So I always struggle saying like, oh, well, their bullpen's great, because we all know is bullpens for every team are a crapshoot. But, you know, we're going to go off, you know, recency bias here. One thing I will say about Riley Green, though, is like Riley Green's one of those guys where this could be kind of the X factor for the Tigers. Like the tools are there for Riley Green. We haven't really seen it all come together at the same time. He's hitting for average. He's getting on base. The home run power, 22 last year home runs. He's a guy that could give you 30, 35. Like, I would love for him to be that MVP level player that I do think he can get to. And I would love to see that in 25. And if he's doing that in 25, we're having an interesting conversation about these Tigers in the middle of the summer.
His come up reminds me a lot of like a Mookie Betts. Maybe not in terms of raw tools, but definitely like on a progression scale. He definitely could find himself winning an MVP in the next like 2 to 3 years. And then we're talking about Riley Green for a lot longer than just the next 2 to 3 years. When I look at the lineup and I look at guys like Parker Meadows, Riley Green, Carey Carpenter, Colt Keith, Jace Young, all of those guys could put up a 115 to 125 OPS plus next year, and you wouldn't bat an eye at it. And if they do, if 2 or 3 of them do, we're talking about a team that waltzes into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm kind of wondering where their projections are for WRC Plus for this team. So it looks like starting lineup, 7 of the 9 guys are over a 100 projected WRC Plus, which would be fantastic. For me,
I mean, Ryder Green's projected at a 130, and like I said, a bunch of those other guys I just said, they're all projected for over 100. Like you said, and if they ended up at a 115, now we got a ball club on our hands.
Wow, that would be, yeah, that would be pushing the limit for sure. All right, perfect. Let's go ahead and move on to the Twins.
The Twinkies. The Twins. Projected to win this division, by the way.
First off, whoever is projecting that can it all the way. Just can it.
Yeah,
because
your players need to play
150
games for you to do that.
There's no way on God's green earth that's happening. Let me just start. Let me say this with the Twins, okay? The Twins... there's like this dysfunction going on with the Twins where they are relying too much on their kind of tried and true Byron Buxton, Carlos Correa, Royce Lewis. You can rely on a little more. I think we all know he's also injury prone, but he is, I would pick him of those three guys any day of the week. They just don't have that extra oomph in the lineup and a lot of question marks. Like I don't think when you look at that lineup right now and you look at that pitching rotation, that is Pablo Lopez, maybe Joe Ryan most days, and then a bunch of question marks. Like, I don't know where they're getting that projection from, especially with the fact that last year they only had 82 wins.
Yeah, for me, I also am just chalking up the fact that Royce Lewis and Byron Buxton are probably going to play 50 games apiece. And to me, that's like a death sentence for this team. Carlos Correa, I'm waiting for his ankle to snap in half any day now. I do want to take a quick second and shout out Eric in the chat. He's a big Tigers guy, and apparently he said, Riley Green, my favorite player for at least the last 3 days.
Boom.
Love you, Eric.
last three days. So we have to extend that.
But yeah, talking about this Twins lineup, man, I mean, okay, so like the names do a lot for me. The names for sure. Willy Castro, Carlos Correa, Byron Buxton, Royce Lewis, Ty France, even Ryan Jeffers, depending on what side of the bet I woke up that day. Like, sure, these guys absolutely could be incredibly good. In fact, the WRC Plus projections for this year look way better than the ones we just listed off for the Detroit Tigers. But like I said, Byron Buxton's not going to play a full season. I hope he does. He's one of my favorite players in the entire game. He's not going to. Royce Lewis, I got to see it to believe it. He's not going to play 162 games this year, I don't think. And then Ty France is just trying to rehab his career at this point. And what are we doing with the lineup after those guys aren't really producing?
I don't really know. And one of the things that I think when you look at this division across the board, it's not just the Twins. This is a division where I'm paying extra close attention to who's on deck as far as prospects for these teams. And the only person that I'm really eager to see is Walker Jenkins, who has the opportunity to be the next big kind of power hitter, next potential five-tool player coming out of the Central. But even Walker Jenkins, his last level was last year was in Double A. His ETA is still 2026. They have about a year to wait for him. I don't see them being aggressive calling him up. So between their kind of lighter farm system and between, don't forget, the Polid's probably selling this team in the last year, I don't see them putting more resources in this team. I think they're going to be pretty stagnant right now.
I couldn't agree more. They have one of the more interesting benches in the division. I mean, look at the bench that's made up of Christian Vasquez, Eduardo Julian, and Harrison Bader. Like, those are names, you know, those are names that baseball fans look at and like, oh yeah, I've seen those guys play ball before, which is, you know, not nothing. I mean, veteran leadership is veteran leadership wherever you get it from. But I don't know, man, I just don't see this lineup staying together. And so the rotation, I personally am high on most of the guys in the rotation.
Okay.
So I think that could pan out, but Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, and then I'll skip down to Chris Paddock at number 5. I could see all of those guys having okay seasons. But as of right now, I mean, 3, 4, and 5 are all projected for 3.98 ERAs or higher, and nobody's projected for lower than a 3.7. So,
well, So true. I guess the secondary point I get concerned about with them, though, is I don't really see anyone outside of those five. There's no depth there. And
no.
And I get concerned about a guy like Joe Ryan and Bailey Ober. These are big dudes, right? I mean, I just the injury concern is certainly there for them.
They're young, though. They're all young, under 30.
Yeah. They are. There's some potential upside there for sure. At the end of the day, there's nothing overwhelming about the Twins where I'm like, wow, I'm really excited to see what they do this year. I think I think when it comes to the likes of the Royals and the Twins, the Royals and the Tigers, they'll get some good wins against this Twins team this year.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think I'm so out on the Twins that that's what helps me with my Guardians love.
True. It's got to go somewhere. Just give it to the Guardians.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, here, there's like players that, and this isn't with all players, but there's some players that when I think of them, I only think of them in one uniform. Like it's an aggressive thought. And Harrison Bader to me is always a Cardinal. Just always a Cardinal.
Yeah.
Always.
He's already a Yankee to me. I wish he was still a Yankee.
Why is that?
Because he's not good.
Oh my goodness, here we are.
Before we move on, can we hear this?
Can we what?
I don't think you can hear it. I'm trying to play stuff off the soundboard, and I had a funny thing queued up for when we get to your Chicago White Sox.
Oh, man. Well, we'll see. If you could play it, just play it. This is the beauty of experimenting with live. Things are not going to work, and here we are. Things not working. So let's go to my White Sox for a second, because it's, you know, the White Sox are giving off a, you know, oh, you're cute energy. And that's this year for the White Sox. Now, let me say this about the White Sox. Obviously, they're not projected to do much of anything. No one expects them to. I don't expect them to. So what is a successful season for the White Sox in 25? And really, it comes down to giving young guys some runway and seeing what they have, whether that's folks currently on the roster, guys like an Andrew Vaughn, someone who really has, you know, Golden Spikes winner, someone who is a top hitter in college, hasn't really put it all together. They want to see him step up and actually put together a really solid season. You know, you have guys like Luis Robert Jr. That's going to be a staple of that team, but he's sure as hell going to be traded if he puts together even an okay season this year. So it's just a bunch of younger guys who are trying to make a name for themselves and solidify themselves on the future of this team, and Andrew Benintendi. So I forgot Andrew Benintendi was on this team until last week, Parker. I'm going to be honest with you.
Because I can't wait. I hope we get to meet him when we go to spring training in like a week.
Dude, let me tell you, I will be such a chicken shit, and I will not have the same attitude when I talk to Andrew Benintendi. I promise you. But I
love the guy so much.
He as a dude, he's a good dude, 100%. Like, he just seems like really awesome, cool guy. But like, they should not have signed him to that deal. Honestly, no. They should not have. And so, anyway, I'm getting off track here with Andrew Benintendi. But anyway, this team. We're not going to go too much into depth on them, even though they're my team. I am excited about some of these young prospects. They have one of the better farm systems in baseball right now because of all those trades over the last 2 years. So this team it'll be fun this season for me, because I'll be looking to see how guys like Colson Montgomery do, how guys, you know, like Lenin Sosa do. Don't forget, Martin Perez was signed by the Sox. He's most likely going to be their ace this season. I'm interested to see how that goes. Like, there's like these little stories and nuggets that are very player focused this year for the Sox, not necessarily team focused, that I'm interested to follow.
Yeah, the rotation outside of Perez Day is going to be kind of, it's not going to be fun.
See, like, here, I don't know if it's because I'm so close to the team that there's like players that I actually think could really surprise some people. Like, don't sleep on Jonathan Cannon. The guy's a tank, like an absolute tank. I do like Davis Martin. Davis Martin could be think of like Liam Hendricks with a better fastball. You know, I like Davis Martin a lot. Like, I think people can sleep on this team all they want. They are going to win more games than last year, if only because it was the worst season ever. But yeah, if everything goes right for them, honestly, they could probably get 70 to 72 wins. If everything goes well, honestly, they could.
Put it on the board.
Put it on the board. Shut your face.
Southside, stand up.
Oh, God. Oh, don't even get me started. We're not.
Can we talk about that call? Because I don't think we ever did.
Southside, stand up. I was like, you should have seen my face. I was watching it like this. I was watching this game. And this is exactly what happened after that call. I went, okay, that's a call.
You know what's funny? That was what I had queued up. I was going to play it on the soundboard, and you can't hear it.
Oh, I'm so bummed.
I had it queued up, and I was going to play it because the funniest part about that call, and I didn't even have this part clipped off, but at the beginning of Benintendi, like, he's been at the shortstop position, rounding third base. And I forget the name of the White Sox play-by-play. I genuinely think he's a great play-by-play announcer.
John Triffin,
he goes, the White Sox win back-to-back games for the first time all season. And then he leads into this outside. Sir, with me, stand up. And I'm like, we just said back-to-back games, dude.
I know. This guy's over here like, we just won a 7-game World Series. I don't know what. Like, I know, come on, I don't know.
Benintendi walked off the ALDS, and I was like, what are we doing? Oh, my God.
It's so fun fact. I've met him. I had a whole 10-minute conversation with the guy. I have a picture with him. He is such a cool dude. Like, he'll come He'll come out of the ballpark. He hangs out with the fans at the tailgates outside the park. He's just a cool guy. I love his energy, and it's not even about him. It's just like, his energy isn't matching the era of White Sox baseball we're in, because it comes off as disingenuous, but it's not. It's not. It's just
like, you want your local play-by-play guy to be a super fan. You want that.
Totally. Totally.
But just read the room.
I know, and it's not it again. I don't blame him for it. It's just a weird situation he's in. It's just weird.
He's also, from what I understand, this is his first daily play-by-play gig as a Major League Baseball announcer. He's trying to keep his job. He's doing a good job at it. Like, that's the kind of guy I want calling games when my team's good. So keep him around. But yeah, it's funny. It's funny how that's how we ended up where we ended up during the White Sox preview.
Oh, that's funny. All right, Parker, before we get to our bold prediction, how is this lining up? Tell me how you think this division is going to fall at the end of the season.
We definitely have different predictions for the first time in all of our previews. It only took us 5 to get it different. But I have the Royals winning the division. I have the Tigers in second, the Guardians in third, the Twins in fourth, and the White Sox in fifth.
Ooh, this is so interesting. Okay. We have the same standings.
Except we swap for Guards and the Twins, right?
No. We swapped the Tigers and the Royals. I have Tigers. Ooh. Yeah. I have Tigers. And my bold prediction is going to inform this, folks. I had Tigers, Royals, Guardians, Twins, White Sox. So I think this is a perfect example of us just manifesting the two teams we're high on. You're the Royals guy. Yeah. I'm the Tigers guy. We're going to track this all season because I think they're both the same sort of team. Up and coming, a lot of potential, great clubhouse energy, two managers that can really navigate this team through 162. I'm excited for the AL Central because of those two teams.
Yeah, I absolutely think I agree with you. Can I ask you, how many games do you think are between the first place team, whoever it may be, and the Guardians?
This is hard. The reason why I say it's hard is because I think this division, again, is going to be a division where the winner is probably winning between 89 and 92 games. Mm-hmm. I'll start there. If you look at it, what it was last year, it was 6.5 games the Tigers were behind the Guardians. I would put it somewhere in that range, close to that, of probably 3-5.
Really? Okay. So yeah. I personally think the division winner will have like 88 or 89 wins.
That's reasonable. That's reasonable.
Okay. If the Guardians won 85 games, would you be surprised?
No.
I'm over here trying to fight for the Guardians. So no, my thing is if they were
go ahead.
If they're only 3 games out of the division lead, you're a hot week away from winning the division. And then anything can happen in the playoffs. I think that's part of the reason that I'm so high on the Guardians. I don't know.
That makes sense. So I'll take that knowledge take that notion and I'll expand on that. I expect the Royals and Tigers to have more hot weeks than the Guardians.
I agree. 100% agree. I think Bobby Witt's going to have a week where he just like gets out only 3 times and then it's be like, oh, look at that. The Royals just won 8 straight.
Right. Oh, goodness. That's funny. No, I appreciate you going to bat for the guards. That's very nice of you.
I'm with you. I'm here for my guard dog.
All right. Bold prediction, Parker. What do you got for your AL Central bold prediction for 2025?
AL Central bold prediction. I think the Cy Young comes out of this division, but I don't think it's Terrence Gubel. Yeah.
It's Jonathan Cannon. I fucking knew it.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think Emmanuel Clase can make a run at the Cy Young.
Really?
What if he has a sub-1 ERA and just 60 saves?
Like that. He would be, trivia question for you. He would be the closer winning the Cy Young. He would be the first since 2003 who won the Cy Young as a attaboy. Yep, that's it. That's it. Wow, I love
Eric
that.
Agnew
that
was
would
a
be
nature in 2003. He was
100%.
The game was over with 2 outs in the 8th inning.
Oh man, can you imagine? And if there was any closer that's going to do it, it would be him.
If it was going to happen, I think it was going to happen last season. That's why it's my bold prediction, not my real Cy Young pick. But Emmanuel Clase, Cy Young. That's my bold prediction.
Damn, that's good. That's good.
What about you? What do you got for your bold prediction?
Mine's Cy Young related too, but this one's gonna be awfully bold. I do think that this division will have 2 top Cy Young candidates, and I think they both will come from the same team.
Tigers?
Yes, sir. I think both Tarek Skubal and Jack Flaherty will have Cy Young seasons.
Interesting. So you think Cy Young 1 and Cy Young 2 are coming, Tarek Skubal and Jack Flaherty?
Not necessarily 1 and 2, but they'll both be in the conversation.
They
My
both
bold
get
prediction
votes.
Is. They'll both get votes for Cy Young and have Cy Young level seasons, and that will inform my Tigers going into the playoffs.
Has Tarek Skubal already gotten Tommy John?
I don't know. Let me look that up.
Because to me, that's a ticking clock for like every pitcher who hasn't.
He actually did in 2017.
Yep, then I agree with you.
That's the barometer. Let me look on the Tommy John chart. All right, here we go. Hey, no, that's a good point. It's a really good point.
Yeah, that's my barometer right there. I think Tarek Skubal is just, I already used force of nature in this podcast, so I can't use it again, but some other really good descriptor for Tarek Skubal.
Yeah, enter adjective here for sure. All right, let's try something new to wrap up our time together here, Parker. Let's do some superlatives, some AL Central superlatives. This is going to be fun. This is not the last time we're going to do this. Let me get mine back here. All right, so here's what we're going to do. This is meant to be totally off the dome, guys. We did not give this any thought beforehand. We did not have this written down. This is totally spur the moment. We're going to go ahead and give you some superlatives. You know, some of those things you see like in the high school yearbook when you're done, things like most likely to do this, most likely to do that. We're going to go ahead and do AL Central superlatives. And I am super pumped about this, Parker, because I think we can get a little crazy with this. And there's some stuff in here that are very serious, folks. And there's stuff in here that is absolute bullshit that we're just going to kind of have some fun with. So first one, Parker, first one. Most likely to lead the division in home runs.
I feel like it shouldn't have been as quick as it came to my brain.
If it did, it did. All right. Ready? Yep. Go. Ah, look at that. We both put... You know why? You know why I put Jose Ramirez? It's because he is always the most underrated player in baseball. This guy is one of the best in the game and seemingly is always forgotten. Underpaid, took the hometown discount. I love me some J-Ram.
Yep, I'm with you on that. I think if Naylor was still in the division, he'd have taken up some of the space in my brain too, but I like that one for sure.
Damn, that's a good one. All right, here we go. Let's keep it rolling. Most likely to give a teammate a bubble gum hat.
Like the bubble on top of
the hat. Double bubble chewing gum on the hat.
I've got this one in the bag.
Oh, really? Okay.
That one was real quick.
All right, go. Hey, that's a good one. Okay, Steven Vogt. I'm going with Javi. Because Javi's... No, he's going to have some time on the bench. He's got shit to do on the bench. Don't you worry. Sorry, Javi. Sorry, Javi. You're a gentleman and a scholar. Sorry. All right. Let's keep it rolling. Most likely to be traded at the deadline.
Oh, this one was too quick. This one's unfortunate. Oh, I guess there's two guys that come to mind for this one for me.
Okay.
I think I know which one you're going to put, but I think I'm just going to put the same guy.
He's the first guy that came to mind.
Yep.
Lou Bob, Luis Robert Jr., 100%. If he doesn't get traded at this point, I'm going to be pissed. Like,
yeah, I mean, you guys need to get something back for him for sure.
100%. All right.
Okay. What else we got?
We have two more. Most likely to change their underwear mid-game.
What?
Anyone most likely to change their underwear mid-game?
Oh, you know what? I think I spelled his name right.
Oh, wait, for the same reason?
Anybody, what do you say?
Anybody hitting against Johan Duran. Are you... Wait, that's fucking...
Christian, okay, there's a little... I had the Duran reason in the back of my head, too, but the reason I was going to say was there was a game one year where Nathan Eovaldi and Christian Vasquez accidentally switched jerseys because they took them off in between innings because they're both so sweaty and gross that they were, like, drying their jerseys between innings.
That is funny.
He's also catching, like, the best splitter outside of Paul Skeens.
I'm sorry. I put anybody hitting against Johan Duran because, quite frankly, if I was in the box looking at an 83-mile-an-hour curveball followed by a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, I'd shit my pants too and have to change them. So you're Johan Duran, baby.
That's funny. That worked out well.
All right, folks. Oh, man. Thanks for joining us this week, man, on Late Night Baseball. We're always having fun talking baseball here. Next week, we are wrapping up.
More, no?
No, we do. We do. Hold on. Yeah, we do. I'm sorry. I was in a rush. I need to change my pants. All right. One more. We have one more. Here we go. End it with a bang. Prospect most likely to turn heads in the NL, or excuse me, AL Central.
Oh, actually, this one's easy for me. I think you and I might agree on this one.
Interesting.
No, this doesn't have to be a guy that makes his big league debut, does it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Whoever you want.
Ready? Who's Hagen Smith?
No. Oh, nice. Hey, Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. That's awesome. All right, so let me explain this for folks. Okay. Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith are the top two left-handed prospects in baseball right now in the White Sox organizations. Parker and I picked these two guys literally for the same reason. Two big, lanky lefties, great arm slots, awesome velocity. I really do think you're going to see one of these two guys in the majors for the White Sox this year, and they're going to be putting on a show. Couldn't agree with you more, yeah. Parker.
They're going to have a great couple seasons and then get traded to the Red Sox.
Shut your face.
It's history, okay? It's not me.
That is really effed up how accurate that is. All right. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for joining us this week on Late Night Baseball. We are going to wrap up our division previews next week. We're doing a big one, AL East. I'm excited about it. Parker's super excited about it. So you'll want to join us. So make sure, again, you're following us on YouTube. This is where we're doing all the fun stuff right here on YouTube. You're going to want to be for here for it. So make sure that you are. Leave us a review, subscribe, like, do everything you can do, please, to share our work. We love doing it for you every week. Make sure you're doing that. And also, make sure you're watching Spring Training Baseball because those games are starting. Parker, I know you're going to be watching it.
Absolutely, man. Can't wait till next week.
Hell yeah. Have a good week, everybody.